Hi there, you're listening to the Estranged Heart Podcast, and I'm your host, Creed Revere. Welcome back to our returning listeners, and if this is your first time here, thank you for selecting this podcast to listen to. As we begin today's episode, I invite you to grab a cup of coffee or tea, settle in, and listen with an open heart. But first, the regular disclaimer. I am not a licensed therapist or counselor. Nothing within this podcast should be considered or taken as therapy. If you are in need of therapeutic support, such as counseling, please seek out a therapist near you. We're back for part three of the interview with an estranged adult daughter. I hope that those of you who have listened to the first two parts have found this woman's story interesting, intriguing, as she has, oh my gosh, so many emotional moments. She still remains articulate in helping us to peel back the layers to understand the depth of estrangement and why this became a choice for her, an intentional choice, not a whim that she made. It was, I hope that you've been able to listen to the first two episodes. If you have not, please go back and listen to those before you listen to this part three, and next week will be part four. But so that you have some context and understand where she's coming from. So, without further ado, on to today's episode.
So the next thing that I want to talk about here is your childhood, kind of how did we get to where we are today, right? A lot of folks in my audience that listen to this podcast are estranged moms, and I think a lot of them don't necessarily understand that estrangement doesn't come from one single event, and how it is more often than not in every case, but more often than not, is something that begins in childhood. Mm-hmm. So kind of walk us through what your childhood was like.
Okay. I'll do my best here. Okay. So there are a lot of things that happened in my childhood that I have had to really go back and look at, because I don't know, I was in a way conditioned or groomed. I don't know if those are the right words, to not look at those things, because the end result looks pretty good, which is me on the surface, right? And like I've told you this before, like, got a great husband, nice kids, you know, financially stable, education. So it's like, well, why go back and look at any of that? Everything turned out fine, didn't it? But I knew the, you know, deep, dark secret that I was hiding was that I was broken inside, and I would just push it down and down and down. So as a part of this process in estrangement, I have really gone back. Again, I'm like doing a 180, like, everything I ever did to try to heal myself and heal my relationship with my mom before never worked. So it was like, totally throw that playbook out the window and let's just try something different. So I was like, I really, really need to go back and really face this. And this is when I started to come across the terms like reparent yourself, parentification, mother wound, the inner child. A lot of these things, I laugh at myself because they sound hippy dippy. And like, if you looked at me 2 years ago, the military officer would have rolled her eyes and been like, oh God. Mm-hmm. But there's a reason that people have come up with these concepts and these names, because they mean something and they help explain things. Right. Okay. So, my parents got married while my mom was pregnant with my brother. So that was a family secret. There were kind of like a lot of those little secrets that I had to discover on my own. And religion was like a big part in those secrets, right? So those are
Right.
things that, like, you didn't talk about. I don't know if my parents would have gotten married had it not been for that pregnancy. I honestly don't know. I don't have really significant memories of my parents' marriage from early on. I say it was probably pretty uneventful. My dad worked a lot. He was in the car business, so very late hours and weekend work. And as I've gone back and I've thought about this, while my dad wasn't around a lot, I have warm memories of him. I do. Like this idea, especially now as a mother, that you walk into a room and then your parent lights up, right? Or like I can look back now and I had this feeling that my dad delighted in me. And I remember that from an early age. Now, again, he wasn't around a lot, but I do remember like just him smiling when I was in his presence. And I felt that and I needed it and I wanted it more. And I don't have any memories of my dad yelling at me or raising his voice. Again, like the parenting was not on him. This is the early 80s, like, so he's out of the house a lot. But when he is around, I do have warm memories of him. And that was interesting to reconnect with those because, like, again, I'd kind of been like given this storyline of like dad, evil, dad left us. And I was like, well, I actually kind of have some nice memories of him. And then later I can kind of tell you about where my relationship is with him now. So then as I went back, I don't have memories of a lot of things from my mom. Like, I don't have memories of hugging and snuggling and playfulness and tuck-ins and book reading. And I never thought about it, but I went back and I was like, wow, I just don't have those. And when I think about where that physical touch came from, it was my grandmother. So it was her mother. So, I wrote to you in my letter, it's like I can tear up because I can close my eyes and maybe I will. And I can smell my grandmother because it was like, her arms would just open and I could just come there and I could feel that hug and I could smell her. And it just became such like a safe place for me, my grandmother. And I don't have those memories with my mom. Now we can go on and talk about when I objectively look back at this, I understand that her mental health issues made her emotionally unavailable to me. And again, now that I understand about attachment and attachment theory, which is a little bit kind of nerding out on this stuff, but like, I think, there was a wall there because of my mom's mental health that she wasn't attuned to us. She wasn't turned into us. And when I think about this idea of like the mother's lap is where you go to get nurturing, to reset, right? It's supposed to be that safe space. And I did not associate those things with my mom growing up. I associated them with my grandmother. So at some point as a kid, I just realized that my mom is sad. And it's such a simple, simplistic way to put this, right? But you don't have the vocabulary when you're 6, 7 years old. But I just knew my mom was sad. My mom did not light up when I came into the room. My mom was not playful with me. I have these memories of my mom sitting at my grandmother's kitchen table, just kind of like looking off into the backyard out the window in the distance. And there's like nothing behind her eyes. It's like this just emptiness. And I just remember as a child, I just wanted her so bad. I just wanted my mom. I just wanted her to smile at me, her to delight in me, her to take an interest in me. But because of her, the things that she was going through, I wasn't getting that. And I realized that that's where, my issues with my self-confidence and my self-loathing, if like the one person who's supposed to be the guaranteed person to like love you no matter what, you know, if you commit the most heinous crime or whatever, right? Like from this early age, I just felt like my own mother was not, didn't love me. It sounds silly, right? But like the, I couldn't point to things that said that my mom loves me. Now, I will say
Right.
my physical needs were always provided for. And this is kind of the interesting part. Like when you look at it from the outside, we had a very nice house in a very nice neighborhood. It was definitely like an upgrade, you know, when you look how my parents had grown up. We had nice cars. I went to a private Christian school, very small school, you know. So on the outside, I'm getting these things, right? But
Right.
there's just nothing happening with my relationship with my mom. There's no connection. There's no kind of attachment happening. So I'm just trying to think if there's anything else I want to say about that. Yeah, I will say this. Things just pop in my head like stray voltage, sorry. Like later on in life, you know, my mom would say to me, "You don't hug me. How come you don't hug me?" And I'm like, "It feels off when I hug you." And I could never place why. But it's because like you have to, that has to start so young. And
Right.
it's like I feel awkward like hugging my mom, which is so sad. And it makes me so sad because I want that, but
Yes.
I didn't get those. It drives me crazy that she doesn't understand that it was her job to set the tone and lead this relationship so that she did have an adult daughter who said, "Mom, give me a hug." And that was a place of comfort and nurturing. And it's not for me. And it's frustrating that she doesn't understand that because she wasn't available for any of that as I was growing up. And then it's like almost like she just showed up once I was married and started having kids and wanted this relationship that the work, the foundation wasn't there.
Right.
Okay, so at some point, my parents' relationship starts to, their marriage starts to fall apart. And that's when things get really tumultuous in my home. You just feel it as a kid. And there were fights that were, you know, there was yelling, there was arguing, there was some violence, there was things being broken, right? So, and I just remember kind of as a kid, you're just helpless, just kind of watching this play out. You're like frozen, just watching this as a movie, and your heart's breaking because you know your family's falling apart.
Right. About how old were you at this time?
I was young. So, my dad, they had one period of separation and then they got back together. And then he left again. And that was the end of it. So this was probably between kindergarten and second grade.
Okay, so you
But
were
it's weird. Like, I
fairly
remember,
young.
but I remember these things. And so, you know, I definitely am starting to feel very, unanchored. I don't know if that's not a word, but you know what I mean. Like everything is falling apart around me. The two people who are supposed to be like my steady, you know,
Right.
grown-ups, like they're not there for me. And you know, I have a brother too, an older brother, 18 months older. So he's a part of all of this while all this is happening. So at some point in there, my mom has a mental health crisis to the point where she is in a facility. And this is hard for me to go back and kind of work through these memories. I remember my dad was still living with us. I remember there was kind of this like rotating door of caregivers. I remember there was a nanny. My dad still had to work. He had a, you know, he was the only one who worked. My grandparents were around a lot. My grandmother really, really was a bright spot and an important person in my childhood, which is interesting because if you look at the relationship that my mom and her had, you know, there was some unhealthiness to that. But when I look at the relationship I had with my grandmother, it was very important and it was healthy because it was just pure unconditional love. So my mom is away. I don't understand what is wrong with my mom. She doesn't have cancer, she didn't break bones. I just know that she's become childlike in a way. I have a lot of memories of her crying. I would leave for school, I'd come back, she'd be in the same, she'd be hadn't left the bedroom. I had these feelings of our just house being like dark, like during this time period. It was a very just dark and kind of cold place. She would have to, her parents would have to come over to care for her. I have this really like bad memory of like her crying out for me. She would say, "Call my dad. I need my daddy. I need my daddy." And I'm a child, and this is my mother calling out, and I have to get on the phone and call my grandparents and mom needs you guys. Can you come over? And I remember my grandfather feeding my mom. Like these things were so hard as a child because I just needed parents, right?
And
And
all of this is, I want to take it just a second. All of this
sure,
is
sure.
happening because, and no one is talking about it, right? Like, no one is. I mean, I recognize that as a young child, no one is going to sit down and go blow by blow of all the things that is happening with your mom. But in addition to the, I mean, the trauma here is, number one, your family is falling apart. Something is happening with your mom, and no one is talking about this to you. No one is helping you to kind of sort of make some sort of sense of this impending doom that you feel as a child, that your entire foundation of what you know to be true in life is disintegrating before your eyes. Would that be an accurate statement?
Yes, it would. And I feel like my grandmother just tried to like love me as much as she could and hope that that would be enough. And like when I look back to why am I here? Like how did I make it through that? Like I do point to my grandmother because there were some things and some influences in my life that I think helped get me through these things. But when you look at like the relationship with my mom, like this is, what was at the root of it. And, at this time I'm going to school. Everyone at school knows, everyone in the neighborhood knows what's going on. It's a very small community. You don't get divorced. Your marriages don't fall apart when you're at this private, faith-based school. So I can feel it at school. I can feel it at home. I'm in survival mode. And then this is where I'm learning to become small. Because it was all hands on deck for my mom. Everything was turned into my mom to try to get her healthy because I know her parents knew that she needed to parent. She had two children, despite her marriage falling apart and everything, that she had to get better because she had their kids. But because everyone was so focused on her well-being and her health, there wasn't a lot of room or space for me to have needs. And for there wasn't a lot of leftover for me. So I kind of learned not to be a burden, not to take up space, not to have needs, to become small. And I was a part of this team that was trying to make my mom happy. I was on that team. And I was on that team my entire life. And this is where it became wired in my brain that I am responsible for my mom's happiness. And I am responsible for her emotional needs, and my mom's emotional needs take priority. They're the most important thing. And this is all subconsciously, happening. And like I remember going and visiting my mom in this facility. And again, no one's really telling me what's going on, but it's, obvious looking around at these patients. And I don't know if they're all, on some kind of medications that are like just making them like zombies. It was just the strangest, weirdest memory, that I have. So then at some point after that, my mom comes home and I guess it's starting to get better. And then my parents were going to try to reconcile. And that didn't go well. And the most, the memory that I have of my family finally ending, and I wrote this to you in the letter, and it's kind of silly, right? But it's a really prominent memory. So I remembered that day I had gotten a perm. Like, my grandmother and my mom liked to give me perms. It was like the 80s, yeah. And it was like a really tight, like bad perm. And I remember my dad would leave for work early in the morning, and he would come into my room and either wake me up or say goodbye or something. But I remember there being some kind of interaction with him before he left for work. And I remember I was thought I was going to be so funny because I was going to like pull down my comforter. I was going to hide when he came in, and I was going to pull down my comforter because he hadn't seen my perm, because he got home so late. And I was like, oh, I'm going to surprise him and he's going to crack up. Like, I had this whole thing planned in my head of how I was going to surprise my dad with my perm. And I remember just went to bed. I fell asleep thinking of that. And then I woke up to screaming and yelling. And then I could tell there were police in the house. Like, you could hear the radios and stuff and the, Velcro. And it's all kind of a blur, but my dad was escorted out, and that's it. And
Oh my goodness.
my dad was gone. And that's hard.
That's so traumatizing. Yes.
Yeah. So I woke up in the morning, and my dad never lived with me again, and was taken kind of in the middle of the night. And yeah, so that was hard. So then, we transition into this. They're starting the divorce proceedings, and it's not good. They don't like each other. Like, I mean, I think they would both say that, but how do you do this with somebody who you don't even, I mean, there's so much anger and resentment, between the two of them. And so, they're going through these divorce proceedings, and I had visitation with my dad, and it was good, but it's different. It's your dad's not in your home anymore. Your dad's not like there day to day. And so I'm just seeing my dad, a couple times a month, and they're good memories, but it's weird. He's moving around from apartment to apartment. He's a bachelor now, he doesn't have, the furniture and the dishes and all that stuff. And it's, and we're just, again, children trying to make sense of, our new world and our new environment. And again, like, you're becoming so much in this like fight or flight because everything is just upended, and you don't know what to expect day to day. And that goes for my mom as well. Like, my whole life became just trying to read her mood and what she was going to be like day to day. It was so inconsistent. It would the majority of the time, she was just like checked out. Like, it felt like to me that she had just given up on parenting. Like, she had just kind of had this idea of what things would be like when she married my father, had this nice house, nice neighborhood. And when that didn't work out, I started, to feel, and I feel like now it's like, was I just like leftovers? Was I just like, this reminder of this
My
thing that
goodness.
didn't, work out? Because there just was this like no, there was no feeling to me that she was interested in me and interested in mothering me and parenting me. I mean, she would barely talk to me. And when I look now at how I interact with my daughter, my 10, when she's 8, 9, 10, I mean, there's so, like, I think I was saying this before, there's just so many like just organic touch points that happen, and then, we develop our own love language. We have our own jokes, our inside jokes, There was, I don't know how to explain, like, that was just not happening. And I felt so alone. I just remember feeling so alone in the world. My dad was gone. My mom was not emotionally available. She was kind of checked out. And then what happened was things got really bad in our house. So there was the three of us there. My mom and my brother and me. And this pattern started to happen where these like big, like volcanic fights would break out. And it could be over anything, right? But they would just like go and go and go and go. And my memories of them it felt like they would go for hours. It did. And I remember they would go in different rooms of the house. You know, somebody would be in this room and somebody would get a thought and come in and be like, well, you da 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 da. And then it would go in the other. And it was just like three broken, traumatized people trying to survive in this house, yelling out almost from this like deep place of like pain. Like we were all just broken and in pain. And these fights were very traumatic for me. I have very not good memories of them. It's like there was no, I don't know. There was just, they were like unhinged is the way I would put them. You could say anything, you could do anything, you could hit, you could throw, you could say the meanest thing you can think of. And we were all at that level. So when you look at like an adult and a grown up, and a healthy dynamic is supposed to be the one de-escalating the situation, modeling regulation. That was not happening. That was not happening. We were just at the same level of like emotional, like maturity and brokenness. And these fights would like break me. Like, I just remember at the end of them, I was telling you this before, like, things would finally settle down and it would be 2 hours later and I would still like my body would shake. I'd get one of those because like my nervous system would just be so shot from going through what I just went through. And again, I'm a child. So it was just very unpredictable. Day to day, I didn't know what my home life was going to be like. I had this memory pop up. We had a cat at the time. And I remember how skittish my cat became. And I thought about, gosh, what my cat must have seen in that house and what my cat witnessed. And then I think, well, God, if the cat was like that, yeah, that explains why I'm so skittish and why I developed this like hypervigilance of just constantly being on alert because you just never knew what the day was going to be like. Was it going to just be like an uneventful day where my mom maybe says a couple things to me and I spend the majority of my time in my room, or where the police going to come? Because that happened too, because the fights were so loud. I think the neighbors called child services at one point because, you know, and I will say that we were not being physically abused in like that, you know, what you think of, but like it was not a healthy environment at all for children to be in. So that's going on. There are good memories, and that's, you know, hard for me because as soon as I have a good memory pop up, I gaslight myself and I'm like, oh, just move on from all the other stuff. Look, you went on vacation and the vacations were nice. So like that was an unhealthy way for me to look at things because I would just be, when these good memories would pop up, I would like gaslight myself and be like, well, just forget about all the bad stuff. Look, you went on vacation every summer. And this is the things that my mom and my stepdad would also bring up of, well, look, you know, we brought you on vacations, we had nice holidays. And we did, like, we did have nice holidays, but I will say, it's not like things with my mom really changed. You know, I have memories of my grandmother, you know, going and singing with her in the choir. And I don't know, just good memories with her. Like, my mom was there. We were in the same physical space, you know, going to these holidays, but we weren't connected as mother daughter. So let's see what happens. Okay. So then my stepdad comes into, so second grade is kind of when everything was like done. And I remember it was like a couple days or a week before my communion, which is like in the Catholic religion. And I remember my dad sitting in the back row coming to the church. And I'm just looking back there and realizing, yeah, my family is just broken at this point. So I have all this stuff going on inside. I'm not getting like the things that you really need when you're a girl at that age. Not learning coping skills. I'm getting very negative self-talk. I feel skittish. I feel unanchored. So then my stepdad comes into the picture. And he was just a wonderful person. And just from the first time that I met him, I remember, like, we went to a restaurant. They dated for a while before I met him, and we went to a restaurant to meet him, and he brought these like little like games, like these little, I don't know what you call them, like puzzle games to solve. And I just remember thinking, like, wow, like he brought this for me, like for us. And now I look back, it was like one of the first times like an adult in so long had like looked at me and like saw me and was like interested in like earning my, approval and respect and love. And like I just remember, like, oh my God, like that, just the smallest gesture, and I just felt seen, right? And so I'm just like instantly drawn to him. And he is also the most like regulated, peaceful, like composed person. And so here comes this, like, I have all these grown-ups around me that are just not, I don't know what the, I don't know how to describe it. But then he comes in and I'm like, wow, like he's predictable. I know what to expect from him. He was just wonderful. Like I can't say that enough. So he comes into my life and things get better. My mom's happy. And she's happy in this new relationship. And she's very invested in this new relationship. So my mom's happy, so I'm happy because I'm finally seeing my mom happy. But again, I've already kind of grown up believing that I cannot make my mom happy. My mom, my presence in me is not enough for my mom. And if anything, I'm a hardship, a burden. But my mom's kind of happy in this, in the beginning of a new relationship. And so they dated for a while before, they dated for like 5 years, before they got married and before he moved in to our family. So things were good when we were all together, but again, when we were home by ourselves, these volcanic eruptions were bad. They were bad. And my brother and I were not in good places emotionally at all. I mean, we were in very dark places. I mean, I remember, my brother opening the door of the car on the highway. I remember, like, there were suicidal ideations across the board. I remember, my brother getting locked in the garage one time, and he took a baseball bat, and our whole garage door was dented up until I grew up and left the house. And it was just this reminder of one of these fights. So that continued to the point. Oh, I will say too that the dynamic of the fights was very strange when I look back. So I would almost align with my mom to like be against my brother. Like the dynamics were constantly changing of who was kind of in the like golden child or scapegoat roles, right? So my brother was like really struggling emotionally, and I felt like if I aligned with my mom during these fights, that I earned her approval. I felt some kind of connection to her, as dysfunctional as it was. And we were against my brother together. And oh God, he didn't need that. And that was so awful. And I feel terrible about that. Okay, but there was one particular fight. And again, this just goes to show you, like, I could wake up and literally not know how my day was going to end, So it was, I was in 7th grade and he was in 8th grade. Came home, another huge fight broke out. We're young teenagers at this point. My brother and I were, cl I like worshiped my brother. I was like the little sister and I followed him around, and he was into like skateboarding and like punk music. And I just thought he was so cool and his friends were so cool. And and he had been like kind of my battle buddy through this childhood, right? Like, so it was April. I remember it was April. And one of these big fights broke out. And my mom called my father and said, I can't handle him anymore. Your son's on the driveway. And that was it. I never lived with my brother again. And when I look back, nobody even asked me if I was okay. I mean, let alone what my brother went through, getting ripped like in the blink of an eye from his childhood home, his bedroom, his belongings. It was the only thing we ever knew.
Right.
And like that, you wake up in the morning, and by the end of the day, your whole life has changed. My brother was just gone. And I've had to go back and mourn that and go through that trauma and feel those feelings. There's anger because you're like, how did my parents not like see what this was doing to me? And my brother, but his story is his to tell.
Right.
But there's like anger of like, why do you think I'm struggling in life? Like all these things that happened, and you're surprised that I'm having a hard time with some things and that our relationship is dysfunctional and not healthy. So then once my brother left, my mom and I just went at it. We just went at it. There was just no, it was just two broken people fighting. I don't know how to describe it. I tried to stay out of my house as much as possible. I went all in on friends. I'll use air quotes in friends because
Right.
those were not healthy relationships. I was
Right.
so desperate for attachment and belonging that I would become whatever I needed to become to be liked, to be, yeah, and these friends, these quote friends, I'm not even friend, like I don't even talk to them anymore, right?
Right.
So, but they were filling a need, and I was kind of like obsessive with these friendships, and I had no idea who I was in all of this, right? I had
Right.
no idea. I was just so desperate to be liked, to feel accepted, to feel good about myself. Again, this is when all my self-destructive behavior happened. So very like promiscuous, abusing alcohol, just anything to feel something or not feel something, right? And I'm just living this high risk, self-destructive life. So somehow in there, I got good grades, and I don't really, I feel like, you're kind of just born sometimes with the ability to
Right.
like, and it wasn't any, I wasn't like, top of the class or anything, but I was definitely getting, college level, college track level grades. And my stepfather was a huge mentor to me in that. And, cause he was a college graduate, and he saw that in me, and he mentored me through that. And, I went to college, and again, that's another one of those things when I try to bring up anything, it's like, well, you went to college and we helped you pay for it. I
Right.
mean, I had loans too, and but I'm probably missed some things in my childhood, but I mean, those are kind of the big things. A lot of traumatic loss of relationships,
Right.
very chaotic, very unpredictable, which explains now how I move through the world. And I just couldn't connect those dots to why I had so many problems as an adult with different things, like I've said before, like in relationships or in the workplace, and with those dynamics. But and another thing that would happen, like anytime that I would try to kind of like revisit this stuff with my mom, she would say things like, oh, it's not like I was on drugs.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Or you would get this response, oh, I was such a bad mother. I was such a terrible mother, right? Or I would get this, well, what about your father? Do you give your father this grief? Right. So it's like anytime that I'm like trying to like, mom, I kind of need to like work through this. And I'd like to do it with you because you were there.
Right.
And I would really appreciate if you could validate the things that happened in our home. The thing that hurt the most was something she's probably said within the last 5 years. We're on the phone, and she says, because it's like I'm a mystery to her. She can't figure out why I'm so, difficult to connect with or why we have this broken relationship. And she says to me, she goes, I was on the phone with my, I think it was her psychiatrist. So she does not go to psychotherapy. She goes to psychiatry. So she said, and my psychiatrist mentioned something that I never thought about. My psychiatrist mentioned that maybe there's something you're not telling me. Maybe you were abused, maybe sexually abused. And I go, I'm thinking, oh my God, my mom, like the way that her system works to survive is she will literally fabricate something. And I wasn't, for the record, I was not sexually abused by family members or anything like that. I'm like, what do I have to do to earn the right to have trauma from my childhood? I mean, like the things that I left, you know, the cops coming, your mom in a mental health facility because she has a nervous breakdown, your dad being escorted out by the police in the middle of the night, you're waking up, your brother's gone, blink of an eye. Like, what do I have to do to earn that badge that I get to wear that says, hey, I went through some shit. And it's like she won't give me that. And it's so painful that like she was there. And you would rather fabricate for your own survival and your needs, you would rather kind of like fabricate this story in your head because that helps you make sense of it and that helps you live with yourself, but not truly. You're not truly living with yourself in a healthy way. You're not truly healing. And you're hurting your daughter. You're hurting me. Why can't you just say, you deserve so much more? That childhood was so hard. I'm so sorry it was so hard. The only time that I've ever gotten that, I swear, it's like you have to back her in a corner like a rat, and then she'll finally say, fine, I said I was sorry. Are we gonna move on from this? Like, it's just, there's just no true healing or validation or acknowledgement, or I just get told to move on with it and all that kind of stuff. But you know, I've learned in estrangement is that, you know, I had to go somewhere else. I wanted her so badly to be a part of my healing because she's a huge part of the story. And you know, I have this like fantasy where it's like we work together as like women in our family and we heal together and we change our family story and we change the trajectory of the story for our daughters and our daughters' daughters and our daughters' daughters, right? This is like a fantasy. I could write it. And I wanted her to be a part of that. And for so long, I did. I put that on her, that the key to my healing was her. Because if your mother gaslights you and doesn't validate any of this, is it even real? You know? But my stepdad used to always say something to me, and I used to just brush it off. And unfortunately, because of all this, we don't have a relationship anymore. But he would say to me, he'd look at me and say, because I would get so frustrated, and he was a sounding board a lot. He's not, I understand it's complicated. He's married to my mom, you know, and I think he just had to find his own way to deal with life. He's sick and tired of being sick and tired, I think, like I was, and he handled it in a different way. But he would say to me, because I would come to him just so frustrated, you know, of just trying to be heard and just be seen by my mom. And he would say, your mom's just not capable. Your mom's just not capable. And I would just, you know, and I've sat with that for 2 years, and there's so many different reactions I have to it. First of all, I really heard it. I'm like, he was really trying to tell me something there. And he's saying, maybe I'm reading into it, but maybe he's saying, I'm the capable one, right? This is like, I've thought about this a lot. Like, while your mom's not capable, you have a chance here. Like, you are capable, but your mom's not the one who's gonna fix this, you know? But then I get anger because I think, well, why do you get to be the incapable one? You know, like, fuck you. Like, I'm the child. Why have I been expected my whole life to show up stronger than my mom, more capable than my mom, able to take more dumped on me than my mom? But like, maybe I did it to myself because I portrayed myself as the strong one, right? Because, like, got the things, you know, the military. But I definitely have feelings of anger at that. Of it's not fair. That's not how the parent-child dynamic is supposed to be. You're always the mother. You're supposed to be the mother. You're supposed to be the rock. And I have been expected to be the strong, capable one ever since I was a little girl. I'm supposed to present and show up in the relationship with her that way, and she just gets a pass. That's how it feels sometimes.
Right.
But then I
That
feel
I,
sadness for her too.
this is something that I really want I
Sure.
really want the listeners to sit with, because there's some things coming up for me if
Sure.
I'm really honest about this, that those of us who present to the world strong and capable, can take care of everything, do everything on our own. We don't need any support. We don't need any help. We've got it covered, whatever, right? Those of us who present that way in the world, every person I've ever met like that is exhausted.
Yes.
Absolutely, utterly exhausted. And always wondering, when is it going to be my turn that someone actually steps in and helps to care for me?
Yeah, like when do I get to be the weak one? When do I get to
Correct.
just crumble? And like, but I never, my mom never. There was never that space. Nobody can hold that space for me because my mom, her needs are have been so consuming and great my whole life. And you know, she deserves help for her needs too. But like what it has done to me as an adult and how it has made me feel about my
Right.
value and my worth in the world, it has messed me up so bad.
Yes. Yes.
This brings this episode to a close. I hope that this time together was time you feel well spent and that you are able to find some takeaway nuggets to help you on your journey, wherever you may be on your estrangement and reconciliation path. If you feel you've received something helpful or positive from this podcast, please consider following us, sharing this podcast with others, leaving a positive review, perhaps entertaining becoming a guest on our show, or following us on social media, on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok under the same name, The Estranged Heart. As a reminder, there is an online support group on Facebook. If you are a estranged mom who identifies as being spiritual and approaches estrangement with a sense of curiosity rather than blame and judgment and desire to do inner self-work and reflection, please seek us out. We can be found at facebook.com/estrangedmothers support group. And lastly, if you are an estranged parent or an estranged adult child and would like to have your story shared on the podcast, anonymously or not, please reach out to me via email at theestrangedheart@gmail.com.